So we're going to learn the Hanukkah Gemara, and then based on the Hanukkah Gemara, we are going to have such tremendous insight into how to be a Jew in the modern world, in the what they call the 21st century. The Gemara says like this, My Hanukkah. What's My Hanukkah? What is Hanukkah? So Rashi already says, we know what Hanukkah is, but what miracle did they establish the holiday of Hanukkah upon? Why was the holiday of Hanukkah established? The son of Rabbanon, because the rabbis taught, the Chav Hebe Kislev Yomi de Hanukkah Tamanya Inun. There are 8 days of Hanukkah from the 25th of Kislev. And it's Asur, Delola Misbeid Bahom, Delola Sanas Bahom. You're not allowed to fast, and you're not allowed to eulogize. Thank you. You're not allowed to eulogize or fast during the 8 days of Hanukkah. Oh, listen carefully. When the Greeks entered into the Heichal, they contaminated all of the oils of the Heichal. What's the Heichal? Beis HaMikdash. So when the Greeks entered into the Beis HaMikdash, they contaminated all of the oils of the Beis HaMikdash. And when the house of the kingdom of the Hasmoneans overcame them, the Nitzchum, and they were victorious, Batku, they searched, they found one vial of oil which had the seal of the Kohen Gadol. And there was only enough for one day. And they lived for 8 days. And the next year, they made it a holiday for Hallel and Hodah, for praise and thanksgiving. So, when is the secular New Year? January 1st. When is the Jewish New Year? Rosh Hashanah. When is the secular Thanksgiving? At the end of November on a Thursday. When is the Jewish Thanksgiving? On Hanukkah. Every day. Every day indeed. What's the first word that comes out of a Jew's mouth in the morning?
Modeh.
Modeh? Thank you. Why is a Jew called a Jew? Yehudi? Why is a Jew called a Yehudi? Why not? We're not all from Shevet Yehuda. Some of us are from Shevet Levi. There's a lot of Shvatim. There are 12 Shvatim. So why are we all called Yehuda? So the Chiddush Arim says, because Yehuda is named after Hodah, after thanks, and the Jew has to be a thanker. If you're a Jewish, you're a thanker. You have to thank if you're a Jew. So that's the Gemara. So we learned the Gemara, the Hanukkah Gemara, good. So for this, many, many years ago, I saw a remarkable piece in... So I always revisit this piece of Rav Kook in his Ein Hayah. Ein Hayah is a sefer that he wrote on the Agadatas of Chazal, because we know the sefer Ein Yaakov. Ein Yaakov is they took all the story parts of the Gemara, and they made a book out of it, just the stories they picked out. And then around that they have commentaries explaining the stories. I always think that the stories of Chazal are a lot harder to understand than the Halakha Gemaras. Halakha Gemaras, we understand the logic. There's a question, there's an answer. When you deal with the stories of Chazal, there's a lot of secrets, a lot of allusions, a lot of metaphors, a lot of mysticism. So you have to really learn it b'iyun. You can't learn Agada b'kiyus. Otherwise, you might really go off the path. So we're not going to do obviously the whole thing because it's very long. But just to take one piece. He says, "Kishenichnasu Yevanim laHeichal, Timu Kol Hashmanim sheBeHeichal." It says that when the Goyim went into the Beis Hamikdash, they contaminated all of the oil in the Beis Hamikdash. So Rav Kook says like this: that the relationship of the Jewish people to the Goyim, Rav Kook is going to talk about how we're supposed to relate to Gentiles and Gentile wisdom. So this is important for anybody here who is ever going to step outside the portals of the yeshiva. Okay, so I don't give myself such a klal. I'd be very happy that I should only be in the yeshiva. Shifti beveis Hashem, Kol yemei chayai. I should sit in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, although sometimes I get very tired and I don't mind lying down. But I should either sit down or lie down in the house of the Lord all the day. But I'm assuming that most people at some point, and you should at some point, leave the yeshiva, because not everybody can just sit in yeshiva for their whole lives, for his whole life. So you have to know, how do I relate to the goyim? So Chazal say that you have done, the pasuk says in Yechezkel, that you have done the acts of the Gentiles. And the, like the law, like the deeds, the laws of the goyim that surround you, you have done. So in other words, Yechezkel is telling the Jews that you're following the goyim. That's the pasuk in Yechezkel. So Chazal make the drasha. Chazal say that you haven't done kimitu kanim shebahem. You haven't done like the goyim, who are cultured, who are ethical, who are kind, who are honest. You haven't done like them. Who have you followed? The goyim who are not mitukanim. In other words, none of you follow the goyim, but you follow the worst of the goyim. That's what the pasuk says. However, he says like this. Even when we follow the good goyim, the mitukanim. What are the goyim mitukanim? The guy who wears a suit, and he goes to work, he works hard every day, and he's honest in business, and he pays his taxes, and he's faithful to his wife. A good guy. A good guy. Get it? Good guy. Guy. Okay? You have to be very careful, even when you follow the good goyim. In other words, the problem with the Jews is very often, we follow the worst of the worst. However, even when you follow the good ones, you have to be careful. What does that mean? It means as follows. Sometimes you see a good behavior amongst the goyim. Let's say etiquette. Instead of etiquette, you know, you say please, you say excuse me. It's a very nice thing. Or their shirt is tucked into their pants. It's nice. You look like a mensch, your shirt is tucked into your pants. Or you give a guy the right of way, driving your car, and you see another car next to you, you let him go first. Like I always like to tell parenthetically the story of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that one time he was in a car, and there was a bus next to them, and they were going into the toll booth, and he said to the driver, let the bus go first. So the driver said, why? So he said, it's covered at Seaboard. They're a large group of people on the bus, and we're just individuals. So that's a nice thing. So these are ways in which goyim behave, which are something we can learn from. So that's definitely 100% true. However, here's the key. Here's the key. Okay. Kili olam chazdo. Right? The key is, listen to this very carefully. Shalom ruach ha'amim b'chlelo. You listen? This is the most important thing you're ever going to learn. Almost. For your whole life. You have to use this every day of your life. Listening? Mm-hmm. That you should be careful that the spirit of the nations in general doesn't penetrate letochen chayiv apnimim, into the inner sanctum of your spiritual life. In other words, there's a difference between Gentile behavior and the Gentile spirit. So when you talk about behavior, sometimes we can learn from them. When you talk about spirit, spirituality, there's nothing to learn. That has to remain purely Jewish. Why? Because the second you allow the Gentile spirit to penetrate the ranks of the Jewish people, and we allow them to step into our private domain, what's going to happen? Then it's going to run rampant. It's going to run rampant. It's going to just destroy everything. That the spirit of the Jewish people is going to be pushed away from its place. And then a strange nation, is going to sit on its throne, like we say in the Haftarah. A strange man is not allowed to sit on the chair of King David, and also the Jewish people. What do we need? We need the spirit of Israel that should be Eitan v'kavua b'lev. It has to be strong and set in our hearts. Torah and mitzvahs and all the holy mitos have to be our stronghold. Umitzad achitzoni batofel shebechayim. However, as far as the external, secondary, ancillary parts of life, mitzad tzorech hashar v'yishev ha'olam, for temporary measures, in order to inhabit the world, in order to make a living, in order to function in society, yivne lefamim lekachas mikol davar tov shiyimtze etzel agoyim asher sviv osav. We can go sometimes and use something nice that a goy made. Let's say a goy comes up with an invention, an iPod. I'd rather call it a U-Pod, because then you better not talk about yourself. How about the other person, less selfish? Everything is about I. U-Pod.
Yeah,
so you get it.
My playlist, not your playlist.
Oh, it's my playlist, not your playlist. I hear. So it's mine. I see. So you have an iPod. So what are you going to do with the iPod? You're going to be like David Jaron, and you're going to use it to take Torah. So now we're already talking. Like immediately when they started coming out with tapes, the Lubavitchers are always ahead of their time. They started taping everything the Rebbe said. They were videoing him, taping him long before anybody else was doing it. And because of that, they saved all of his Torah. There was a big rub in Bnei Brak, for Chaim Friedlander, when he used to give Shiurim in Panovich. He's a set of Sfarim called the Sifsei Chaim. And they wanted to put a tape recorder in the Beis Medrash and tape him, but people thought it was too modern. So because of that, because it was like it was nobody had done it yet, like it was considered radical. Because of that, what do we lose out? We lost out on a lot of Torah. So if you see something good amongst the Gentiles and you can use it for your purposes, then by all means. However, that is provided that the spirit of God and His Torah is strong in your heart. So the goyim are not entering into our territory. The goyim are not entering into our private domain. We are going out into their domain. We're taking what we need, and then we go back, like you do when you grow up. And well, you're already grown up, but when you get even more grown up, and you have a job, how do you relate to your job? Say you work in the city, and you live wherever you live. So during the day, you're working, you're amongst the goyim, you're in the city, not everything there is so pure and so holy, but you have to make a living. You have to bring home the kosher bacon. But then you come home at the end of the day, what happens? You leave that all behind. Now you're in a mini base at Mikdash. Your house is a Mishkan. So you don't let all the influences of the outside world, you have to insulate yourself from, because now you went out there to make your living, but now you're coming back to your holy place. But when you let the outside world into your house, that is where the problems begin. So you take what belongs to them, and you bring it into your tent, but you don't let them in. You just take whatever you need, and you bring in what's necessary. Yafiso shel Yefes be'olei shem. Like the Gemara says, that the beauty of Yefet, who came from Yefet, Greece, Yavan, okay, that is going to be in the tents of shame. So sometimes we can use, same thing applies to wisdom. You have secular wisdom. You use it for your own purposes, whether it's to get a degree or to learn a profession. And then afterwards you say, okay, I'm using this because I need to make a living. It's important. However, that my spirit is not going to be saturated with these ideas or with these philosophies. But kasher ruach Yavan paratz likanes b'tochol mekdushas shel Yisrael, when the spirit of Yavan penetrated the depths of the holiness of the Jewish people, and they try to create a new Jewish spirit, right? Misyavanim. What's a misyavanim? It's a Jew who thinks and feels like a guy. That is a problem. And now they have new desires in our internal lives based on the Greek approach, based on the secular approach. So that's how he explains Pshat in the Gemara. Beautiful. It says, Shenichnesu leheichal. The second what does it mean literally? It means that a bunch of Greeks entered in physically to the Beis HaMikdash. What does it mean metaphorically, spiritually? It means that the Greek philosophy penetrated into our internal mikdash, that every Jew has an ishama, and every Jew has an internal world, pnimius, and the Gentile spirit penetrated the Jewish internal world. That's what it means. Shenichnesu yevanim lehechal, when the Greeks entered our own hechal, our own internal Beis HaMikdash, what are the next words of the Gemara? Timu kol hashmanim shebehechal. They contaminated all of the oils. What does that mean? He says, amazing. He says, not only did the Greek ideas and the Greek philosophies contaminate us, however, that philosophy impacted even the way we thought about Jewish matters. Right? Like, let me give you an example. In the world of academia, nothing is holy. Right? If somebody says something and you disagree with him, you can I have a different opinion. And you can try to disprove anybody. And there's nothing axiomatic. If you have a proof otherwise, or if you feel otherwise, or if your logic dictates otherwise, anybody can argue with anybody. Right? Let's say you open up a Gemara. So the first thing when you open up a Gemara, you take it as a given, is that every rabbi in this Gemara was Kodesh Kedoshim. Every rabbi was holy. Every rabbi was much closer to Mount Sinai than you were, where God revealed himself. And you're not allowed to argue with anybody. You'll never see in 1,500 years of Talmudic commentary, it hasn't happened yet, that somebody got up and said, Rav Ashi said like this. Rav Ashi is wrong. In Torah matters, I'm not talking, sometimes in scientific matters, there's a machlokas. Some people say that in scientific matters, we don't have to accept what Chazal said. But when it comes to Torah, they weren't necessarily scientists, they were rabbis. But when it comes to Torah matters, you will never ever see that somebody comes along when it comes to halacha. That somebody will come along and say, when it comes to Agadita, so Shivim Panim LaTorah. The Gemara will say this way, and the Ibn Ezra will say differently. But there are two ways of looking at it. But when it comes to halacha, nobody has ever said that the Rav Ashi held like this, Beis Hillel holds like this, and I hold differently, I disagree. And that's why in the Gemara, a Tana is not allowed to argue, an Amora can't argue with a Tana, and a Rishon won't argue with an Amora, and Achronim will rarely argue with Rishonim. And today, certainly not. Nobody will get up and say, the Rambam is wrong. They'll say, the Raivin and 16 other Rishonim argue with the Rambam. But what is in the world of academia, it's a completely different attitude. Who cares some guy named Hillel said something? Who cares? I think differently. So that attitude also influenced the way, it also colored the way Jews related to Torah. This idea of, I say whatever I believe. And let's say we have a rule in Torah. Let's say you think so. You have an idea about God. But your idea contradicts the Torah. So your idea is batul umavutal. The Torah says that God, God runs the world. And you think that there's luck in the world. Good luck. Knock on wood. Yes? So, you're not allowed to believe that. And even if you have 50 proofs, 100 proofs, you're still not allowed to believe that because the Torah says otherwise. It says in the Gemara, how did you get onto the Sanhedrin? You had to give 150 reasons why a rodent is pure. What's the halacha about a sheretz? It's impure. It says in the halacha that in order to get into the Sanhedrin, you had to give 150 reasons why it was pure. What's that all about? The answer is that there are 150 reasons why it's pure. However, there's one very good reason why it's impure, which overrules all the other reasons. And what is that reason? Because God said so. So God said so, and that's it. And that's it. So there's a limit to human understanding. What does the Ramban say somewhere in Sefer Vayikra about the Greeks, about some of the Greek philosophers? They only believed in what they could see. If you can look at a microscope, and you can see it under a microscope, it exists. If you can look in a telescope, it exists. If you can't see it, it doesn't exist. If you don't understand it, it certainly doesn't exist. Right? What did one doctor say? He said, I've done thousands of autopsies, never seen a soul. So if I haven't seen it, it doesn't exist. So let's say a Jew accepts that approach, then what happens? No more God. Because God can neither be seen nor comprehended. So therefore, that's a very dangerous philosophy. So it's not only the specifics of Greek attitudes and knowledge that are dangerous, but it's the very approach which can color a Jewish approach to studying Torah. And there are people who have that today. You see people sometimes, when they study Torah, they don't have so much derech eretz for Chazal, and for the Rishonim, and for the Acharonim. Remember, we once had a guy like that in Yeshiva. He would make such late sonnets, he would scoff at the Acharonim, right and left. Ah, he says, ah, it's so stupid, and he says this. And he happened to have been a very bright boy, but he thought he knew it all, right? So if you want to do that, to a scientist, I think you should still have humility, right? A Jew should always be a grape, right? What do you make on a Jew? You make a brei priya eitz and an ala eitz. Why? You have to be an anav. You should be humble. I think even when you're anav is a grape, and humble and a grape. So you have to be humble. But when it comes to Torah wisdom, you can't do that. And when Rabbi Akiva Eger has a kasha, Rabbi Akiva Eger, one of the greatest achronim, when he has a bam on a Tosfos or on a Rambam, what does he say? He says, "V'Hashem Yisbarach Yair Einai." God should enlighten me. I don't understand. Whenever you finish off in rabbinic literature, whenever they can ask 30 strong questions on somebody, at the end they'll say, "V'Tzarachiyun." I need to look into this more. Like, I just don't understand. Not that he's an idiot or that was stupid. Because you have to have derech eretz, certainly for the earlier generations. Sometimes when you're in the same generation, you can argue, but even when you're arguing there, you're also arguing with derech eretz.
Except for the Rambam.
Except for, so sometimes Rishonim against other Rishonim, sometimes they use strong language. But even then, the Ravid wouldn't have spent so many years writing a commentary, however long it took him, writing a commentary on the Rambam, even though he spoke very harshly against him, if he didn't think that the Rambam was great. He knew that the Rambam was great, but he just said in certain situations, he agreed with the Rambam on everything, lechora, except in certain situations. He said, come on, you know, this just can't be. But you have to have respect for people in our generation, just for Torah's emes, sometimes for the sake of truth. You have to be a little bit strong if you're on their level. But besides that, certainly the earlier generations we have a great deal of respect for. And not only that, but in the secular world, let's say you have no morals. You have no morals. You could be the greatest guy. Albert Einstein was a womanizer. But Albert Einstein was a great scientist. Is it a stira? Can you be a great scientist and a womanizer?
Not a stira.
You can. You definitely can. It's been done before. You could be a great philosopher and a womanizer. You can be a great anything and a womanizer except a great Torah scholar. If somebody has Torah and he doesn't have Midos and he doesn't have Yerushimayim, then that's meaningless. So somebody, no, he's a great... Sometimes they'll say about a guy, they say he knows so much Torah. You know, they'll try to justify his behavior. It's okay because he knows so much Torah. We don't hold to that. If a person doesn't have Yerushimayim, if they don't have their 48 kinyanim of Torah, if they don't follow those 48 kinyanim, then we don't believe that they really have Torah. But what is somebody from a secular perspective going to say? He's going to say, well, I don't understand. He's a genius. You should see the way he rips apart the Gemara and the ideas that he has and the svaras that he comes up with. He's a genius. If he doesn't have Yerushimayim, if he's not, you know, careful about what he says and about what he touches and about what he looks at and about the way he acts and what he eats, then it's meaningless. So that's what the Ratzon Rav Kook said. That the spirit of Yevanos also, not only was it metame, the specific oils of, what does oil always represent? Wisdom. Wisdom. Shemen represents chachma. As it says, harotze lahachim yadrim. If you want to become wise, you should angle yourself when you daven Shemen Esrei a little bit to the south. V'simarach, and what's the simon to remember that? Menorah v'darom. That the menorah was in the south. The south, the menorah represents wisdom. That's what the Netziv says, the sheva chachmos. The seven branches of the menorah, represent the seven wisdoms. By the way, the Gra says that you have to understand. If you don't understand his Talmud quotes him saying, if you don't know the other wisdoms, you don't really understand Torah. Like one of the wisdoms you have to understand is music. If you don't really understand music, you're missing out a lot on your understanding of Torah, which is the 1,845,333rd reason that I don't really know Torah. Right? Because I don't really fully understand music. I can't even say I partially understand music. I just know when the music starts playing, I start dancing or singing. But more than that, but he said you have to understand music. There's a lot of spiritual depth to music. So the oil is wisdom. So not only do they contaminate some of the oils, some wisdoms, but they contaminated all wisdoms. In other words, even when we were learning Torah, we were learning with a Greek approach. So he continues. And now we have to know Ulaman yelanu amud zeh. Yisrael v'horoseinu esaderach v'galuseinu pizarenu v'ena amin. And in order that this should be a pillar to teach us in our exile amongst the nations how to relate to their wisdom and to their customs, to be careful that the spirit of what we absorb from the air of the Gentile countries should not penetrate into our internal lives, which is holy, with the name of God that is called upon us. And we shouldn't be, I'm just doing a running translation, and we shouldn't be seduced into saying that this foreign current will only touch part of our opinions and part of our character. It's not true, because it has like a subversive effect, right? It just comes and it destroys everything from the root. All of our opinions and all of our attitudes are then going to be colored by the Gentiles. That's what I always say about sports, right? I don't think there's anything wrong necessarily with enjoying a game, but if it's part of your spirit, like that's how you identify yourself, like this is my team and I'm in love with them, so that's not just a matter of enjoying the game or even enjoying the beauty of the game or having a good time. Having a good time is a nice thing. However, it's the spirit. In other words, some people, like for them, like their team wins, they feel such an aliyah. Like, oh, this is unbelievable. Like now, this was a good year. This is a good year. We ended the year 8 games in first place. And a bad year is when, your team didn't do well. So that's the difference between enjoying it and allowing it to be your spirit. So that's what he says. Timu kol ha-shemayim shebehechol. So he said that's what we have to be careful of when we go into galus. That the Gentile opinions should be used, however, not internally, only as an external part of our lives. And then whatever we don't, but in our internal world, in our avodas Hashem, in our ruchnis, we should know that has to be purely Jewish. And so now the Gemara continues, and it says, "Ukishigav ramachus beis chashmonai v'nitzchum." They, when the chashmonaim were victorious, what did they find? They found one holy vial that had the seal of the Kohen Gadol. What's the one holy vial that has the seal of the Kohen Gadol? And they only had for 1 day, and then a miracle happened, and it lasted for 8 days. So who's a Kohen Gadol? Every Jew has a Kohen in him. Where do you see that? Rav Kook says beautifully. Who eats Trumas and Maaseres? Kohanim and Levim. One exception. What's the exception? Miser Shani. We also give Miser Ani, that's for the Aniyim. But Miser Shani is like a Kohen. Why is that like a Kohen? Because we bring it up to Yerushalayim, right? The Kohen's also allowed to feed his family. But that's all because of the Kohen. But every Yisrael, let's say you live in Tveria, right? Like sometimes people when they come up to me in the base manager say, do you know where the Rambam is? I say, yeah, in Tveria. So let's say you live in Tveria, and you have an orchard. Richard's orchard. Let's say your name is Richard, and you have an orchard. Okay? And what do? You have to bring it up to Yerushalayim, and you have to eat it there. So that's like a Kohen. So he says, that's the Tzad Kohun on every Jew. It says in the Pasuk, V'atem tiyu amlechas kohanim v'goy kadosh. You should be a nation of priests, a kingdom of priests. How are we a kingdom of... We're not a kingdom of Kohanim. We're not a kingdom of Kohanim. We're a Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim. Why are we called a kingdom of Kohanim? So if I'm not mistaken, the Baal HaTurim says that in the end of days, all Jews are going to be Kohanim. We all have a certain Kohanic aspect to us. So what does it mean that they found one vial of oil that didn't have... That had the seal of the Kohen Gadol? What's that referring to? What do they call it in Yiddish? The Pintele Yid. The Jewish spark. There's one Jewish spark. The Chiddush HaRim also says this. There's one, in other words, no matter how much a Jew is contaminated by Gentile attitudes and opinions and behaviors, there's always going to be one spark that they can't touch. That's why you see an amazing phenomenon amongst the Jews that you don't find amongst the Goyim. If you take a Muslim will die for his religion. And so will a Christian. But take somebody who was born a Christian or born a Muslim, but they never followed it at all in their life. They were completely secular. Maybe there are, but I've never heard of any case, of any story, where they were willing to give up their lives for their religion. And so what? So my grandfather was a Christian. I'm going to die for Christianity? People don't care. But a Jew, no matter how far removed a Jew is from his religion, we've heard so many stories, all of us, I'm assuming, of Jews who are willing to give up their lives for something that they never, ever kept. And they never, ever cared about. You hear stories like that in the Holocaust. Other situations where the Jews were willing to give up everything to remain Jewish. Even though they didn't keep it, and they even claimed not to believe in it. So where does that come from? That's the one holy spark. The Sfasema says that it's referring to Avram Avinu. Because Avram Avinu, it says, God said to Avram Avinu, Anochi Magen Lach, I will shield you. And that's the bracha of Magen Avram. God shields Avram. What's the shield of Avram? That's that Pintel Yid. The spark that every Jew has, God makes sure that it's never extinguished. It's always there, and you never know when it's going to flare up. Amazing. So that's Avram, and Avram in one pasuk is called a Kohen, Tehillim. Sfasem brings down, and Chazal call him Gadol, Adam Agadol Banakim. So he puts the one and one together, and he says he's a Kohen Gadol. One place is called Kohen, and he's called Gadol. And who do you make a Kohen? You make the greatest guy the Kohen. So Avram Avinu was like a Kohen Gadol. So that spark of Avram Avinu is within every Jew, and that the Goyim couldn't extinguish. In other words, even though their spirit had contaminated our spirit, however, deep, deep down, there was one part of us that was untouched. And then, so they found that one little holy Jewish spark, but there was only enough, he says, for one day. What does it mean there was only enough for one day? He says, it was only temporary. Temporarily, we were able to elevate ourselves. However, a miracle happened. So in other words, he's taking the mace of Hanukkah, the simple meaning, which was enough oil for one day, and also understanding it metaphorically, that it's talking about the Jewish soul, the Jewish spirit, that it only had enough for a temporary salvation. And what ended up happening? A miracle happened, and it spread. That this little spark spread for 8 days. What does 8 always symbolize? 8 in Kabbalah always symbolizes, the Maharal says, above nature. Above nature. That's why Shemen, Shmone, Shemen. Shemen is oil. Shmone is 8. Shemen is overweight, is fat. Because Shemen, Sheva, Saveya is nature, 7. In nature, you always have cycles of 7. 7 days of the week, 7 years of Shemitah. Right? So there's a lot of 7 cycles, the number of cycles of 7. That's nature. That's being satisfied. Shemen is over and above. And that symbolizes Yemos HaMashiach. And that's Shemon. And that's why the miracle happened with Shemen. Shemen is also Miloshen Shemone, also above nature. So what happened here that was above nature? That not only did this miracle happen temporarily, that the Jewish spark remained that little bit. However, it remained throughout the generations. And that's why the Sfasema says, we light, we have not only a din of Neri Shubeso of one candle, but we try to expand on it. The next night we light 2, and the next night we light 3. In other words, we try to take that holy Jewish spark, and we try to make it into a bigger conflagration. Another candle, well not one big conflagration, but another spark, and another spark, and another spark, and then it goes up till 8, which symbolizes, says Rav Kook, the day, Umalar, it's Deas Hashem, Kamayim Liyam Echasim, that the world is going to be filled with knowledge of God. So that's how we understand this Gemara. That it's not only talking about the literal miracle, but also there was a miracle spiritually, that the Jews had become contaminated by the Gentile spirit, and it wasn't just something external, a way we made a living, or intellectual knowledge that we had, but rather it colored our entire perspective, even our perspective on spiritual matters. We looked at it from the Greek viewpoint. And then the miracle was that they were able to look deep down inside of themselves and see something that had never been touched by the Gentile spirit, and then the miracle happened. They overcame them not only physically but spiritually, and not only was there an ace with the Nair, there was an ace with the Jewish neshama that to this day, shebuchol dor v'dorim d'maleinu l'chaloseinu, they try to destroy us, and they're not successful, and that's because of the Jewish spirit. If not for the Jewish spirit, we'd have been gone a long, long time ago. You know, it always amazes me. There's some Jews, some of them even profess to be atheists. However, they still think that Judaism is important. There's one famous philanthropist. He gives millions upon millions of dollars to tzedakah, to perpetuating the Jewish knowledge and tradition and feeling. and he claims not to believe in God. And if he doesn't believe in God, he probably doesn't believe that God gave us the Torah and Har Sinai. And if he doesn't believe God gave us the Torah and Har Sinai, he probably also doesn't believe in the Kedusha of the Gemara. Right? And yet he's willing to spend so much money on to perpetuate Jewish values. If I didn't believe in God, you know what I would do? You know what I would do? I would do what Herzl. You know what Herzl recommended? He had the answer to anti-Semitism. Why don't we all just convert? And then there'll be no more anti-Semitism. If you don't have Jews, you can't have anti-Semitism. Right? So, Jews, no matter what, even if they don't believe in it, or other Jews who might not necessarily be atheists, but they don't keep most of the mitzvahs, you'll still see them in Shul on Yom Kippur. And you'll still see them, you know, sitting Shiva. And they still might very well give money to Jewish organizations, whatever it is, because of that little spark that's inside of them, that they still want to be connected to something Jewish. They still think it's important, even though it's only brought us pain and suffering, and they themselves claim not to believe in it. So that's the power of the Jewish spark. But Baruch Hashem, we're not in that madrega, that little madrega of being minimalists, of doing almost nothing. We have a lot more, but we also have to be very careful. Because in the previous generations, how do they try to get us to be goyim? How do they try to destroy us? By killing us. And by threatening us. And how are they doing it today? Today they do it. It's a lot more insidious, a lot more dangerous. What do? They say, come, you can be part of us, and we'll even give you kosher food. As long as you act like us. They have parties, you know, they used to have something called, I don't know if they still have it, they used to have something called the glat yat. So they said the only thing kosher about the glat yat is the food. Right? So if you can go on vacations like them, you act like them, talk like them, you dress like, you do everything like a guy, but at the end of the day they say, okay, but on Saturday you can still go to your synagogue. So that is a lot more dangerous, and unfortunately we all are influenced by that attitude. And we have to, what Hanukkah teaches is we have to ask ourselves, is this affecting my Jewish spirit? Obviously you have to earn a living, but is this affecting my, in other words, am I acting like a guy, am I thinking like a guy, am I saying no? That I go, why does a guy go to work in the morning? Because he wants to eat. So why do we go to the work in the morning? Because Hashem commanded us, it's a mitzvah, to get up in the morning and go to work. That's why. Hashem commanded us to eat. If Hashem would command us not to eat, then we wouldn't eat. We do it all the time. Right? And why? How do we choose a place to live? Right? We choose a place to live, not based on where we like it best, but based on what Hashem wants. Why does a Gentile do something? Whatever feels good. You fall in love with a girl. You met a guy and he said, I fell in love with a girl. What would you tell him? Great. Marry him. Marry her. Great. Right? You fall in love with a girl. Is she for you? I'm not so sure. No. Maybe she is, maybe she isn't. But we don't just do things. I'm in love. You're in love. Let's say she's Korean. She's Korean. Her mother was Korean. Her grandmother was Korean. All the way back to the first immigrant to Korea. She's Goya, Bas Goya, Bas Bito Shol Goya. And she has no intention of Korea. You're just head over heels in love with her. You were sitting next to her in college, you know, one day you looked over at her test paper and you see she knew all the answers, you copied from her, and you said, this is a match made in heaven. Saying, she is going to be my helpmate opposite me. Yes, literally. Right? My Ezer Kenegdo. And you fall in love. So, that's not the Jewish way. You know, you fall in love. And, she's not Jewish. So that everybody in this room, I assume, would agree with. That if you fall in love with a girl who's not Jewish, you're not going to marry her. But even if you fall in love with a girl who is Jewish, right? But what is your home going to look like? What type of mother is she going to be for your children? What is she going to say? What is her own spiritual state going to say? What is she going to do? What is she going to want to do with you on a Saturday night? Is she going to say to you, if you sit in the base medrash on a Saturday night, she'll give you $100 check to a local Jewish bookstore? Or is she going to say to you, come, let's go to the movies? And you're going to say, no, I want to go to a shir. And she's going to say, you know, you can't be fanatical about it. You can't be fanatical. By the way, nobody ever said, you can't be fanatical about the Rangers. Because they call it a fan, and of course he's a fan. Everybody's a fan. A fan is normal. When you talk about religion, they talk about religious fanatics. Why don't they talk about religious fans? Religious fans. So I'm a fan, I'm not a fanatic. Fanatic is like a pejorative term, no? Fanatic. But if you're like a sports team, it's also called, it's a fan is Miloshim fanatic. But there, it's a positive term. I'm this fan, you're that fan, but I'm religion. Don't be a religious fanatic. What does it mean, don't be a religious fanatic? You know what it means? It means, don't pay attention to all the al-chaits you say on Yom Kippur. It means, don't take God too seriously. That's what it means. Don't. If anyone ever says to you, don't be a religious fanatic, ask them what it means. I'm telling you right now what it means. It means, don't take religion too seriously. Because there's God, but God isn't everything. Like, there are other parts to life besides God. Anybody who says there are other parts to life besides God is an apikoros. The pasuk says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. The only thing in life is God. God encompasses everything. So when you go to the bathroom, you want to know how to wipe your tushy? The Mishnah Berurah says how to wipe your tushy. There's a godly way to wipe your tushy. And when you get married and you have the most intimate relationship with your wife, so the Torah says how to have that. The Torah says doesn't say to do it. You know, you're not supposed to be the whole time saying Tehillim. And not, you know, obviously the Torah says to do it in a normal way, what we would consider normal. But it doesn't matter what we would consider or not consider. The Torah tells you how to do that also. And the Torah tells us where to live. And the Torah tells us what we should do for a living and how to act at work. And let's say I lend you $15,000, and you're begging me. You want to give me a gift. You want to give me $16,000 back because you're going to take the money and you're going to invest it. You're going to make a lot more money, and you're happy to give it back to me. So a lot of people say, well, he's giving me a gift. What's the big deal? So that's ribbis. That's one of the worst averus in the whole Torah. So that's it. That's it. That we have to be God is everything. God is everything. This God who is everything told us to go to work. God was everything told us to play ball. God was everything told us to relax. God was everything tells us to laugh sometimes. God was everything tells us to take a nap. God was everything tells us to go on vacation. God was everything tells us to have a family and a wife. God also tells us that a wife should be pretty. Right? There's no mitzvah to find the ugliest, most unattractive girl and marry her. Because I only want to get married l'shem shemayim. The Gemara says she's supposed to be, but God also says, and God tells us where to go to college and where not to go to college. And God tells us what type of friends to have and what type of friends not to have. Sometimes somebody says, I have a problem now. I went to Israel and I got so strong, but I have friends back home who are going to try to get me to smoke pot again. What am I supposed to do? What's the answer? Pot b'melach tocha. It's okay if you want to learn Torah to eat pot, to eat bread with salt. However, the problem becomes when people want to smoke it and they don't want to eat it. So Mishnah Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says that a ben Torah should definitely be involved in pot. But again, we're talking about the type of pot that you eat with salt and not the type that you smoke with your friends. So so what do you do about such friends? So what's the answer? It's very simple. You know, I give one answer to such a... I've been approached with this question a number of times, and the answer is very, very simple. You say to them, listen, my sweetest friends, you can put your arm around them, you give them a nice kiss. You say to him, I love you. You're a wonderful person. We've had a lot of great times together. If you want to come with me and do my things, then I'm your friend. But if you want me to go to your places, then I can't be your friend anymore. I'm sorry, you're a great guy. I spend my time, I'll see you in shul, I'll see you in the Beis Medrash, maybe I'll see you in the weight room, maybe I'll play basketball with you, right? But if you want to go with me to clubs, and you want to go to all these hangout spots, I'm sorry, I just don't do that anymore. So that is what you say to the friend. He says, no, what are you going to think? I'm going to become one of these flip-outs like you, right? So the answer is, if you don't want to be like me, then I'm not going to be a fun friend for you to have anymore. So I can't be your friend anymore. So, what are you going to do about friends? Everybody needs friends. Not a problem. It's not a problem. Any religious level you're on, you can always find good friends. You can always find good friends. So it's very simple. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us who our friends are. And everything is God. That's what it means. Ein Ol Milvado. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Not only that he's the only God, but also, he's the only reality. And everything we do is for God. It's that simple. And that's axiomatic. Nobody argues with that. I'm saying in Jewish philosophy. Nobody says, yeah, there is in life where you don't really pay attention to what God says. But some people compartmentalize God. You know, like they kiss the mezuzah on Yom Kippur. See you next year, God. You know, some people where tzitzis for shachris. Right, they take off their tzitzis after shacharis, they take off their tefillin, they put it in their tefillin bag, and then, you know, I'll see you tomorrow, God, I'll see you tomorrow morning. And in the meantime, there's no God. God is everything. And why do you have people who learn daf yomi? Why do you have jails with daf yomi shiurim and minyanim and kosher food? Because they compartmentalized God. They put God in the shul. They say, God, you stay here. Don't move. Don't move. I'll daven to you here, I'll learn for you here, but don't move. Oh, and you can also be in my kitchen. They put God in their kitchen with their dishes, in their fridge, and in the shul. But what about in the business world? Then it's a different rules apply, and you can do whatever you want because you have to make a living. How are you going to make a living? What do some business people say? If you're completely honest, you can't make a living. Come on, let's be real. If you're going to be honest, you can't make a living. Sometimes you have to cut corners. What do we call cutting corners in Judaism? Stealing. So you have to ask a shot. So somebody learned the Gemara recently. Somebody asked me a question. They were working for somebody, and the person tried to prove to them from the Gemara that you're allowed to steal. So the person asking was a woman. It's very easy. Go up to a woman and say, you know, if a woman's working for you, say, oh, you don't know Gemara, but you're allowed to do this. I know Gemara. Gemara says you're allowed. So you go, you ask a Shaila. You see if the Gemara really tells you to steal. Gemara really tells you to steal. Halacha l'maisa, gezel akum is aser. You're not allowed to steal from a Jew, and you're not allowed to steal from a goy. Period, end of report. So they don't know, but Chazal didn't know this guy. Saying, this Italian guy, had they known him, they would have said, I can steal from him. So God is also in business. And when God says not to steal from a goy, that includes all goys. So that's the lesson of Hanukkah, and I hope we internalize it.